Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why episode 302, my conversation with theater artist Olivia Wise. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Yes But Why is sponsored by Audible. Get a free audiobook download as well as access to hundreds of books and podcasts. You just have to sign up today for your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. You know you can get Yes But Why on Audible, as well as tons of crazy books, amazing stuff for free that you don't even have to buy. And then every month, because you pay for it every month, they give you a chance to get a book so you can listen to something new. It's a pretty amazing system. It's a really nice app. It's easy to use, and it's super helpful. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Sign up and get your account today. Yes But Why podcast is also brought to you by podcastcadet.com. Podcastcadet.com is pretty much the culmination of all of the podcast knowledge that my husband and I have after both of us doing our podcast for so many years. I'm on year 6. I want to say he's on year 7. Every time we learn something new, he'll make a video to put up on podcastcadet.com. And, you know, we have new knowledge and new connections with people. So if you have a question or if there's something that you want to try and you just don't know how to get it started, contact us. Let us help you. We just want to help podcasters figure out how to get it done, how to do it so that you can afford it, but also do it with, you know, really high quality stuff. So connect with us. Maybe we'll just give you advice, or maybe there's something we can help you with. We can help you with your editing, or I can give you a, you know, script writing workshop if you want to put together a fiction podcast, you know. Mention code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. Let us help you. Podcastcadet.com. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with Olivia Wise, a writer, actor, and improviser who recently relocated to Chicago from Austin. Listen in as we chat about wacky wigs, dramaturgy, and cool comedy classes. I now present to you Yes But Why episode 302, Olivia Wise and being funny in your own special way. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan and this is
Yes But Why.
Yes But Why.
Yes, but why?
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 This is the Yes, But Why podcast.
What comes to mind first is I grew up with 6 cousins who I hung out with a lot when I was a kid. We would do things like play cops and robbers, but I would write a script and then we would all dress up and we would perform it. And I would kind of direct things like that. not even knowing what that meant, but I would play that way with a lot of my friends where I would go to their house and we would like pull out boxes and like make a skit about like racing cars and stuff. Like it was all silly. We would write a little bit. We would, I guess, improv. I didn't know what that meant at the time, but just like playing, obviously, as a kid. And that was one of the things I did. I also I was really into Shel Silverstein poetry, and I would write poetry. When I was probably like in third grade, I remember I had written a few poems and I asked my teacher if I could like perform them with my friends. And so we would cut out paper props and then like perform them in class together. Just silly stuff like that. I also played with dolls, like big Polly Pocket girl.
But were you writing Polly Pocket scripts? Is that?
That would have been super cool. I was not writing Polly Pocket scripts. I guess because I needed other people to be around to like do my bidding rather than
for some reason, dolls weren't good enough to do my bidding.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah, they weren't going to say the lines the way you needed mm-hmm. them to, or receive right. the direction properly, for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, now that you mention it, I remember I used to feel weird about the fact that I never play-acted my dolls. Like, mm-hmm. when I was a kid, I would just dress them up and then, like, lay them out and then yeah. do a show for them. Like, they, I didn't.
I love it. They're your audience.
They were the audience. Mm-hmm. But I made sure they were a well-dressed audience. You know what I mean? Like, oh, none good. Of this, yeah. like, shambles coming to my
show. You've
got
show. A classy show right? going on.
This
yeah.
is legit. There are candles. Mm-hmm. No, my mother would have killed me. But like, yeah, I never, just now when you said that, like, oh, no, they couldn't be my actors. They weren't.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, now I understand why I never played with them, because they weren't the right medium for me. They exactly. had to just be the audience. That's what I wanted. I just wanted attention.
Mm-hmm. It's too much control. You need like the chaos of someone else who won't do it exactly how you imagined it, you know?
Yes. Yes, you do.
There's something fun about that. Of course, I wasn't yes. thinking about that when I was little, but like,
no,
probably.
But there's something, the beauty, okay, the reason why I always bring up the childhood thing is because there's something about what you experienced and the way that you dealt with what you experienced that, and like, inhabits you as an adult. And then, mm-hmm. like, it develops what you're into and, like, how you do things. And even, like, just this discussion of us, like, like, it took me years to realize that I was performing for my toys for years. Yeah. And then I was like, oh, okay.
Right.
Like, exactly. And in the same way that you're like, no, I needed the chaos. I think that even though you're right, like, as children, we didn't acknowledge it as chaos. If you are the kind of person who can handle that, like when you're a kid and you're like mm-hmm. big groups of people and you're all like, hold on, I'm going to handle this. Everyone, let's do this. And you like can organize that chaos. That's very helpful, because in the theater world, it is very chaotic. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because right now I do a lot of work in organizing corporate AV, and corporate AV is super not chaotic. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. it is, but it's also like, here's the schedule and this is how it works and this is what we're going to do. And it's very business. Whereas like you do a play or like any sort of sketch show and it's like 1,000 insanity and like wigs everywhere. Yeah. And like
yeah.
on the day of the show, there's a guy coming to you with like, listen, I rewrote the script. I'm like, cool, say whatever. Like, hey man, just make sure your scene partner knows, like, I'm right, out yeah. now. It's show day. Like, but there's something beautiful about that chaos.
Oh yeah, for sure. And it's funny because, I mean, I've thought about this pretty recently, reflecting on like what I used to do as a kid and knowing that I used to direct. I mean, I used to write and direct and perform as like a child, and I never knew what that meant. And I've always been scared as an adult of directing. I feel like that is such like a crazy difficult role that you have to have so much leadership skills and just like foresight and like understanding a big picture of the project. And I've always considered myself not one of those. I don't feel like an organized person in my like daily life. But it's funny to think back that like I was doing that as fun. Like that was the stuff that I enjoyed doing, was gathering a bunch of people or just my friends and my cousins and writing something and then figuring out how to put it, like throw it together with stuff we had in our closets and in our like dress up boxes. But yeah.
Yeah. I love that you were writing. I love that you were like, you had scripts and the best part is that like, I'm not imagining you on a computer typing these scripts, but rather like mm-hmm. handwriting
oh,
these
yeah.
scripts and like handwritten and you make each copy yourself, you know, like,
yeah.
I was
and
like,
sometimes
no.
it would be, sometimes it wouldn't even be written. It would be like, I think you should say this. Like,
sure.
yeah, I would just giving the gist. It was like, a little bit of improv and whatever, just things kind of telling people like what characters are playing. Like, here's the kind of thing you have to get to, the plot device. We have to get to.
You know, it's funny. That's super classic. Like the idea of just the frameworks, right? I work teaching a comedy camp for kids every few summers, and during the day, I'm leading one project, but we usually get two or three other teachers that are in the summer camp crop of teachers to come in and teach something different, right? And it's different people every time. They usually like hire the base like directors of the camps, and then they seek out like interesting new skills from different people. They're like, well, we want the main stage next year to be this, so let's teach all the kids who are going to audition eventually how to do sword play. So they get like a sword person, or like a Shakespeare person. Oh, next year we're going to do this musical. Let's get like a few singing, you know, like singing lessons going. So they really like work on it and sort of prep, because these kids they do the summer camp and then they come back and they like audition to do the plays at the theater itself. Good spot, Georgetown. Oh, you know,
I went to school at Southwestern.
Great.
So I lived in Georgetown for a little bit.
Awesome. Absolutely. Georgetown Palace Theater, great place. Awesome. Yeah. Super awesome for their education department. They are like so on point with like organization and having cool things. And one of the teachers that I had was this guy named Ben Sterling, who taught Commedia dell'arte. And Commedia dell'arte is like this old Italian like art form where essentially they just had basic ideas of characters and they would play those characters. So what you're talking about being like, oh, I just gave them a framework and they built it. It's like, you know, you were like connecting to like classical theatrical things. Like, this is in all of us. It was like born of the ages. You know what I mean? They're doing this when they just had rocks. Like, this is classic, you know, like you're tapping into, you know, the essence, man.
Yeah. And I didn't know I grew up in a very small town, country towns, all of my life. So I didn't know what theater was like until I was in junior high. It was just mostly skits, what I called skits back then.
Sure.
What I guess would be like rudimentary sketches. It was just funny bits that my friends and I would like do together. That got me into theater eventually, because there was, you know, we had high school theater. And so I had a teacher who saw something I put on for like a talent show with my friends. We did I can't remember what the song is called. We did like a silly song and dressed up and performed it. And it was really goofy. And she was like, you should be in our theater group. I was like, what? I never thought about it. I don't know. I never like
good for knew her.
What that was.
Absolutely. Good for her coming out to the talent show to get new talent.
Yeah. She was recruiting. Yeah.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you? Small town.
Right.
How are you going to know who can do what? They have a talent. She's like, hey guys, you know, be cool. A talent show. Wow. Did someone say that? Was that, what a cool idea. That would be very helpful.
Oh yeah.
To me as the high school theater. Yeah. It was like secretly she was like writing in like things on like a ballot for like the town council. Like, you know what guys, there's been a lot of votes for a talent show. And they're like, let's do it. She's like, yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, cause how else do you even know? You know what I mean? Like, even just to go back to like the comedy camp, like I didn't know there were kids around that could act the way some of these kids did until I did this camp. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
What? No way. I always thought like movies with children in them were just like a miracle. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like every time I saw one, I was like, man, how do they make
They like
kid?
Hold the cookie out of frame. The kid's like looks like dog acting.
Yes. Yes, exactly. You know, for sure.
Yeah.
But no. I mean, like, there have been other, I've taught, Georgetown started me with my kids teaching, but like, there have been other workshops that I've taught where I've like taught tiny child actors that I was like, I felt like I was talking to Meryl Streep. Like, where I was like, ma'am, yes, absolutely. That was an excellent choice. I just want you to know that I appreciate you for attempting the exercise I've provided. Like, how does this person give me this, like, I'm immediately like, you know, in deference to this tiny girl, but it was like, oh no, she's got it. I can, I'm just watching it.
Yeah. Oof. It's crazy what kids can tap into.
Yeah. I mean, you never know. It's great that you're, that there was a high school theater program and that your teacher was, you know, excited enough about recruiting that, you know, she's going to the talent shows and finding the cool people and getting them involved with stuff. That's really helpful. Yeah. A lot of towns, you know, don't so much even have the high school theater. So, you know, that's great. What kind of stuff did you do?
We did, I mean, it was very much a theater class run by a Spanish teacher and then a math teacher and then a journalism teacher. Like, nobody there was really a theater person. So it was just kind of a club that they made happen, to give us something creative to do, I guess. but we did a fall show every year, and then we competed in UIL one act play, which I think is just a thing in Texas. I'm sure that they have different versions other places, but
I don't know. I mean, I've heard about it. I grew up in Massachusetts, so I did not have it. This was not a thing that, like, it was only in college when I found out, and I was all like, what? I could have been competing in high school? Another one of those things where I was all like, what? So if people are listening right now, if you are a teen and you are like, UIL, what? Just look it up. Maybe you can get involved in it. It's a helpful connector, if nothing else. You know, I don't think you, like, win awards or money or anything, but, like, it's a very helpful connector to meet other theater kids in the world, you know, so you can be like, oh, I'm not alone. Very helpful.
Yeah, and I mean, it, you do win awards, which is really cool.
We didn't
advance very far, but it was really fun. Most of the time, it does instill a lot of anxiety in your theater experience because you are, like, timed on setting things up, and you can get disqualified for a little, you know, not meeting your time restraints and stuff like that. It's like, it could have been a great performance, but you didn't advance because you took too long to put the Chase Lounge in the right blocking or whatever strike.
Oh my God. That's because festivals are run by stage managers. That's why.
God bless the stage manager. So, I mean, we would be there for ages.
Oh, 100%. I mean, and as a career path, go for it if you're into that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, telling you you're disqualified because you didn't move props fast enough, like, yeah, that's a little intense. How about we give people awards for, like, saying all the lines correctly? Like, that's what we actually, you know, like, let's imagine real life, you know, like, this kid goes on to be an actor. Is the film that he's in gonna close down if he doesn't move the chair in the right spot? Probably not.
I guess they had to put some, like, sports things in it so we'd feel like a team or whatever. Sports. I don't know.
Like, you all have to wear uniforms. It has to be the same color. Mm-hmm. It has to work into the script. You're like, what? I don't. were there any one act plays that you did that, like, particularly stuck out to you or, like, inspired you, or you were already a director and a writer, but, you know, was there anything where you were like, ooh, this person's written something interesting?
Well, we did really classic, I mean, not classic, not like Shakespeare stuff, but
Neil Simon.
Not even Neil Simon. I think classic is in, like, I guess classic for one act play. Like, these are traditional, like, people just pull this for their one act play very often. So we did Steel Magnolias.
Realize that was a one act play.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it was cut for one act eventually, but Steel Magnolias, we did The Importance of Being Earnest, which was my favorite. That one was so fun. A lot of we didn't explore too much. We were just like, this is what we have in our binder of options someone else has done, like, 10 years ago. We'll do it again.
Your school bought 6 scripts from Samuel French and that was it.
Yeah, exactly. So we weren't very educated theater-wise, but it was, I mean, still Magnolias has a special place in my heart. I love the story. It was such a fun play to perform. And then The Importance of Being Earnest was actually my senior year. I basically got to pick the play because the director really, really trusted me. He was like, go for it. Do whatever you want. So I picked it because my...
eyes say checked out. Your eyes say this teacher checked out for the year and made me do his work. Tired.
I think he was like 93, maybe.
That is a young man. Oh,
he was a sprightly 93, but he was, I think he just, you know, was there for moral support mostly and to like make sure that there was an adult in the room while we were setting things up. but yeah, I got to pick that play, and I picked it because it was something my aunt had been in. And my aunt passed away of cancer when I was like in fifth grade, I think. And so there's just little moments in time where there's something that my mom has told me about her. So there's been opportunities to like honor her in little ways. So that was one of them. She played Lady Bracknell. And so I played Lady Bracknell, and my mom helped me. We all had to make our costumes or buy them at Goodwill. There was no budget at all. So that was fun. But my mom was always very into like actually like sewing these like beautiful costumes. Awesome. And, but yeah, we threw that show together. I know I helped like set design it, and I don't know. I was very involved in that process, which was really, really fun. We didn't, I don't think we advanced with it, but it was just a cool experience because we had everyone who was doing theater in that class at that point was doing it because they loved each other and they just loved being around each other. And having something to do together creatively. So it was really like, we forgot. I mean, the competition was whatever. We were just having a good time at that point.
Yeah, totally. It's so interesting how like in high school, you know, you do plays with your friends and, you know, if you are the kind of person who's like, oh, I'm going to keep doing this. This is something that I'm super into. And then like, all those other friends don't. It's so weird because that happened to me too. Like every single one of the people that did theater with me in high school just don't anymore. Yeah. I'm like, what? I'm the only one? Like, that's crazy. I did not expect that would be the case. I definitely imagined that more of them would have gotten involved in theater and whatnot or performing in some way. You know what I mean? So I was just like, huh, you know, so it's just, you're right about this. Like, it's a fun extracurricular to go do, you know, it can be, who doesn't love dressing up? And then like, you know, I mean, Halloween's the number one holiday. So of course everyone likes dressing up. You want to put on costumes and act silly. Let's do it.
Be an ingenue for a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah, if you can.
I got to be in Little Women as Beth, and spoiler alert, everybody, I got to die. It was the best.
Ooh, I love it. I was so always good. The old lady.
Oh, I mean,
I was always the old lady. But... I loved it. The character parts are so fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, for sure. Especially with the old plays that they'd let you do. That's why I asked which ones you did, because like, I don't know, they're so stuffy in schools about like what they let them do. Though now I'm on a Facebook group with a bunch of like current high school theater teachers. And it's great to see them talk, like people who work at schools. Like I'm in it because I teach kids, but I don't work for like a, you know, actual high school, and to hear them talk about the plays that they're like bringing up and showing their kids. I'm like, oh, thank God for them. Like, no one shows you these plays. No one's like, hey, do you know what's on Broadway right now? You don't? Let's talk about it and why and what that means. And like, you know, just different things. Like, I don't know. It's really fascinating. So you got out of your small town, Importance of Being Earnest skyrocketed you directly to Southwestern.
Well, not directly. Theater
or mm-hmm. no, not directly.
I did do theater there. So I was a slow starter. So I went to community college in Waco for a couple years and then transferred to Southwestern. But I did theater in community college, which was super fun too. It's an interesting group of people that go to community college for theater. But I met one of my biggest mentors there. She was our theater history teacher, dramaturg, Cindy Sorrell, who is so smart and just really knows like how to direct you on a good path. But she's definitely someone who, she guided me toward Southwestern, and also just came and supported me when come see my shows every now and then when I was in something at SU. But awesome. Yeah. So yeah, a little 2-year stint in community college, very fun. And then went on to Southwestern.
You just seem to have just like the perfect attitude for that kind of journey, right? Like, you're not like, yeah, I went to community college. You're like, so I went and there were such fun people.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. You know, like, yeah. That's what a great way to like soak up that experience and to like, and to appreciate the people that you got to interact with, right? I mean, like,
yeah,
there are great actors and great performers all over, no matter where they go to school. It's mm-hmm. not just like, oh, did they go to NYU? Like, no, man. It's about this sweet group of people and sweet Cindy Sorrell helping it all out. I love also that she taught you what the word dramaturg was. I'm pretty sure I was 35 before I heard that word. So go on her.
I know. And she tapped into like the smart ass version part of me that wants to be the smartest person in the room. She was like, here's how you do it with theater. you do dramaturgy. So you know everything about everything.
You know what, though? I listen to a lot of podcasts exactly like my own, except for a lot of times it's film people and often famous film people who are talking about movies that they are preparing for. And the ones that were like, you know, certain actors where like when you watch them, you're like, oh, my God, they're so amazing. When you hear mm-hmm. them talk about it, they're talking about the research. They're talking about the mm-hmm. work. They're talking about the dramaturgy. So she's not wrong. I mean, there are people out there who wouldn't be the top name actors out there if not for the effort they put into the work that they do. Like even just like I feel like I'm lowballing it to say Leonardo DiCaprio, and I really am. But in this particular story, they were talking about how he was always so prepared on all the movies. And if anybody, mm-hmm. even like a small part was slightly unprepared, he'd be like, no. Mm-mm. Like he wanted everyone to be as in it as he was. And he'd come in with like not only all his lines memorized, but like he'd understand the like deeper levels of what's going on in the scenes. And he'd like talk about it and like bring in like, oh, this happened actually one time. Here's an article. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, this is real. You know, acknowledge that. It's like, what? Oh, my God. Like so much work. So the work and the dramaturgy, I mean, it's important. And it actually improves a performance.
Absolutely. And I think dramaturgs are so cool because they're so versatile. Like you can be a dramaturg that just serves the audience, like how to mediate, you know, talkbacks and tell like guide conversations so that everyone's getting the most out of and learning how to ask good questions. And I don't know, they're just so essential, but a lot of people don't know about their practice. So that's a cool thing. If you don't know what dramaturgy is, look into it. If you love to do research, you love history, you love writing and construction of worlds and stories, then it's a cool little field in theater to look into.
It's also something really interesting, especially I feel like right now there's a lot of like art that gets thrown to the wayside because of its content. If it doesn't meet our current like cultural standards. Mm-hmm. And a dramaturg will tell you why it was written and what the context in which it was written and like what it means to the person who wrote it versus mm-hmm. the way we see it through our lens right now. And that's so important to be able to look at a book and not just read it for yourself, like, oh, I'm going to take it in my own point of view, but also to acknowledge, oh, this is what they were going through when they wrote this. And like, this was the world that they lived in when they wrote this. Like, there's something so fascinating about the full picture of artists in the way that they are creating. And I think that's partly, you know, kind of why I like doing this podcast too, is to mm-hmm. like kind of examine the larger sense of like, oh, okay, you came from here and this is where that led you. Because I think the story of how art gets put together and imagined is as exciting as the art itself.
Oh, know? For sure. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Going back to even like, you know, being cool with the community college. I mean, I auditioned for one big school. I just had no idea what I was doing. I remember I sang a Les Mis song maybe, or I definitely did a monologue from something very, very cliche. And then I cried all the way home on that like 6 hour long, boring ass drive from Abilene back to like middle of nowhere, Aquila, Texas.
Oh man.
So that was my effort of trying to go big. But community college was a gift. It was so great. And I definitely like would never, ever, ever, discourage someone from doing that if that's, you know, what makes sense for you.
Yeah.
Starting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, sometimes community colleges are working harder than regular universities.
Oh, yeah.
Big universities are just resting on their laurels from like, did you know we were invented in 1622? And you're like, cool, no one cares. Is anyone interested in your classes? What are we learning and taking from it so that we can live in the world? Nothing?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
You know, your assistant professors are probably teaching at the community college for like hundreds of dollars cheaper per class. So there's that.
Yeah, and they're doing it for what they love, so it's like way more exciting for them, and they're like mm-hmm. into it. Oh man, yeah, that's funny. I mean, I feel like it's really just a matter of what you're passionate about, right? I'm thinking mm-hmm. about those teachers at the community college. Why wouldn't you be passionate? Makes me want to go teach at the community college.
Yeah, this is your sign.
Yeah, I was like, ACC, here I come. Oh man. Yeah, I mean, you know, not everybody's got 4 years to be dedicating to a degree that may or may not help them. I have one, and I have a lot of debt, and no one cares.
Yeah.
Like, super cool that you have a theater degree. How'd it go? It was fun. Mm-hmm. That's about it. Like, I had a really expensive 4 years of practice adulthood, and then...
Oh, yeah.
And then I went and tried it for real. And it didn't go well the same way it doesn't go well for everybody, right?
Yep, for sure. Yeah, what's a degree worth anymore, you know?
Yeah.
But,
well, you
know,
earlier you were mentioning that you knew that you directed as a child, but that you haven't directed as an adult because it kind of like, you know, makes you feel like, oh, maybe there's too much going on. I don't know mm-hmm. if I can do that. I wonder... At any point, did anyone tell you that you shouldn't direct? Was there any negative feedback to you in any way that maybe pushed up against you?
Not that I can think of. I think it's mostly my perfectionist brain. So I don't know where that voice comes from, but just the one in your head that's like, nah, you're not capable of directing actual adult people who, you know, actually know what they're doing and not just 8-year-old kids who want to dress up. But
oh my God, 8-year-old kids are like way more professional than most adults. Like, let's be clear.
Yeah.
Like, they'll put their tutu on when you tell them to. They will stand in the spot you say, and they will sing every word to that song that you told them to. I've had many adults that would not put on their tutus, stand in the place I told them, or sing the words I told them to sing. So, you know.
Yeah. but yeah, I don't think there was anyone who ever said, that's not something you can do. I think I think I just sometimes put myself in a box of, you know, if you're going to be a performer, you're a performer. If you're going to be a writer, you're a writer or something, which is not the case with any at this point in the creative field, you have to do like a little bit of everything, you know?
But I think all, like, that to a certain extent, you're not wrong that in the last 20 years, it was definitely the common, like, idea that you had to pick one thing and stick with it. Mm-hmm. For sure. For many years, that's what they were telling us. And you're right. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think it's better for you to be a Swiss Army knife. It's better for you to know all the different skills for various reasons. Sometimes it's because, well, you're it and you're doing it all. And sometimes it's just good because, like, you're working on, you know, this part of it, but the person who's working on the other part that you know how to do is maybe making a faux pas, and you can swing over and be like, don't do that because they don't like it. You know, like, whatever it might be. And then that's just helpful in a larger sense, you know. That being said, also, I was recently, like, talking about, you know, I was in a writer's group chatting about, like, what you're submitting for things. And, like, nobody submits spec scripts anymore. They don't want to see you write somebody else's thing. They want to see you writing your thing. And that's like, it's like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, I've spent my entire life preparing spec scripts because that's what you told me was the thing. And now I got to write my own for you to. So I feel like maybe the common vibe and the, like, rules of what to do have changed. You know what I mean? Like, you're not wrong that I'm sure the world of being in theater puts you in a box and tells you you've got to make a decision. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel that. I've definitely felt that. And I'm also like you, where I've like, well, I did a little bit of this and I did a little bit of that. And then I jumped over to this thing. And it's like, no. Like, even I quit being a stage manager so I could be an actor because I thought I really wanted to do that. And no one told me I could have just done them both.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
why not
make some money while you're.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, get some of those transferable skills or whatever.
Yeah, connections, perhaps. Because what the stage manager does is talk to directors and designers. Why not meet those people?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, stage management got me into way more interesting rooms than acting ever did. Mm-hmm. And yet I was like, no, it's not for me. That won't be what I'm doing with my career. As if I was better than it. I'm not. Please take me back. But, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's kind of how dramaturgy was for me. It just put me in spaces with people who are being really innovative and who are, like, rethinking what are we making theater for, and who is it for, and how do we expand the idea of who it's for, make it more accessible. It's just so interesting. And so, I mean, people are thinking on way new levels about it that it makes it more fun. I don't know. I love, like, new theater and theater that is trying to be, you know, explorative and on the edge of something kind of dangerous. I think that's what makes it so fun and cool. I think with the directing thing, like, it's the perfectionist brain, and you know, when you're an actor, you're a writer, you can, like, spend a lot of time perfecting what you're going to do, how you're going to perform, or what you're going to write on a piece of paper. But when you're directing, you have to, like, make negotiations and small choices in the moment, and that stuff is terrifying in a way. So I think that's how improv has helped me a lot, like, has made me grow as a performer in so many ways, is really having to make those split second decisions and just trust that, like, other people are there to support you too. And you kind of just have to go with it. And if it's not perfect, that's fine. Like, you're not going to make something perfect on the spot.
Also positive supportive rooms. I have found, you know, like, there's something about the art of improv that lends itself to a crowd of people that will have your back, right? That will, you know, support you. So if you're making something, they help you in a different way than other people did, right? And right. almost like we're talking about with, you know, dramaturgs put you in a room with people that are innovating in, you know, new thematic ideas. And then, you know, improvisers put you in a room with people who will let you make new performance ideas. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, all right. Yeah, we're all worms. Let's do this. I'm ready. Yeah. You know, and like yeah. I have thrown out some crazy town things and people are like, okay, yeah, mm-hmm. let's do that. You know, and that's all you need is someone to say yes, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you know, every person in film is just looking for somebody to say yes, here's a green light to what you want to do, right? So yeah. why not on stage and in theater as well? Somebody just has to say yes and then you can yeah. make it happen.
Yeah, that's the best thing about theater and about just live performance in general is the trust that happens between like between a team or a cast, but also like between a cast and the audience. You have to have so much trust to like open yourself up to vulnerable ideas and like see yourself in these people on stage and to, you know, make connections. I think it's just that's the beauty of it, of live performance in general, is there's something different. Like they say that when many people are in a room in theater, I think there's science behind it. I could be getting this wrong, but like your heartbeats start to sync. And I think it's just like the beautiful thing about it.
Yes.
That keeps me coming back to it because there's something really magic there. And that's all I crave is like magic moments in life, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to think about it too. And I think that that's magic moments, I think, is a great frame for, you know, living a life in theater and in performance and in, mm-hmm. you know, just creating stuff in general. Because, you know, if you're expecting, oh, my career is going to be great. No, your career is going to be an up and down. It's like the ocean. Yeah. It's in, it's out. It's, you know, sometimes there's a lot of weird creatures in it. Sometimes there's mm-hmm. nothing. Like, sometimes it's just foam. Like, you know, but if you focus on the moments and you can really, like, enjoy those when you have them, I mean, then absolutely, you know?
Yeah.
If the pandemic has taught me anything about what I want out of art, it's live performance. Mm-hmm. It's live. And I don't even know if I need to perform. I just want to put stuff on a stage for other people to see and yeah. to be with. And like we all get to experience that together in this moment, you know, like even just for a long time, we've been experiencing stuff on a global stage, like everybody at once is reacting to the same things. And that's great. Yeah. And I am into it in a larger globalization of the world kind of situation. But I don't mind those smaller rooms anymore. I miss them. I miss mm-hmm. 60 people. You know what I mean? Sitting in squeaky chairs.
Yeah.
Looking at me on a 5-inch stage. Like there's something nice about it. There's something comforting about those physical human beings. I miss them. I miss them like I miss noses and mouths. You know what I mean?
yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think Magic Moments was just like chef's kiss, like way to describe art.
Yeah. Well, it's the things like, and again, with improv, you're taught to, you know, when you're in classes to spend time out of classes looking for those moments in life that like those curious moments, the moments that make you stop and like look at something or just a funny thing you notice in your everyday life. And I think that's such a beautiful practice because you just start to see like those are magic moments happening around. And then it is like it's a bit of like world theater where there's a weird some like a beach ball bouncing down your street in a suburban neighborhood and you're like, where did this come from? Is anyone else seeing this? Why is this like making me feel so giddy in this moment? And it's just like little things that are fun to experience by yourself, but then like having someone else there to I don't know, corroborate that giddiness and that joy of like weird, unexpected life that happens just in moments that you don't expect it. I think that's my favorite thing in the world is just like, yeah, the mundane things that turn into like really fun moments.
I think that's a really beautiful practice of like seeking out these little moments in the world. Who brought that to you? Like, I've never heard that. I think that's a wonderful like corollary to improv classes. Do you remember what teacher inspired that meditation, or if that was just something that like you connected to personally when you got out of the classes? Like, because I get walking out of an improv class and having that like, you know, euphoric feeling where like you think you get the world in a better way, and you look at these other people and you're like, ah, the plebs, they don't even know.
I'm trying to think of who it was. It might have been, maybe it was Kristen Hinn, who it was just a practice of coming into class and like, did you notice anything funny in the world in your week? And so I guess for me that just translated into like being more playful. Just being more playful in the way that you observe life. And it's like a practice of living in the moment, like kind of a meditation in a way, that helped me to like make that practice. And it's something that I forget to do every now and then, but when I'm reminded about it, it's like, ah, life is so fun and weird. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it like worth living.
Yeah. It's a beautiful perspective to have, and to be able to see things like that, to be able to look and experience the world, you know, and not be like, who left their beach ball out? Ugh.
Yeah.
Somebody should put that in the trash. Why are they just trash rolling down the road? Instead, you're like, there was a party that lost its beach ball. Are they sad, I wonder? Did it fall out of a bus? What happened?
Like, yeah, exactly. It's all it's all the stories that like that spring to mind when that happens. Those kind of things happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so just fun. A mystery too. Who knows? And you'll never know. And that's what's fun about it, is you'll never know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. My initial connection with you was finding a video of yours online, which I found so deeply entertaining that I sought you out to put it up on a show. I was like, this is funny. Can I put it in my show? And so my first connection with you is as a performer. Mm. How did you in your adult life, you know, post community college in Southwestern, you know, like how did you get into, you know, creating characters and making videos and, you know, putting that kind of stuff up on the internet?
That's a good question. I think I've always loved, so one thing I've always really loved is collecting wigs. And I feel like my characters are born out of something like a wig or piece of clothing that, you know, I'll just sit in front of a mirror and like put a wig on, and then I'll be like, what is this? Who does this make me feel like? Or like, what, who is coming out of this? So yeah, it happens. I don't know. It's long car rides where I have to just entertain myself, where I'm just making up funny voices and characters in my head. And then I'm like, oh, that's good. We'll do something with that. A lot of wig work in the mirror, just being silly. And I haven't done a lot of characters. It's kind of a newer thing. And I feel like it's definitely been since I've started doing improv and like exploring sketch writing in the past. I started improv in 2019, so right before the pandemic. I graduated like the weekend of the pandemic starting in the US. So that's all pretty new to me, and it's been really fun. But yeah, the characters have come out of, some of it was COVID boredom, just putting stuff up on TikTok for a little bit. I haven't done that in a while, but that was a fun venture for a bit. But yeah, just being bored in my room and trying to find ways to entertain myself, and having a costume bin or two that I just dig into when I need some inspiration. Yeah.
And are you improvising these characters when you're putting them up, or are you writing?
Oh, so it depends. I'll try to write sometimes. I actually took a really great character class with Stephanie Thorson. This was during the pandemic. Stephanie Thorson is now in LA. But I took her online class and it was so cool. That taught me how to create a character from like writing and from brainstorming concepts and ideas. She's so great. That was a very new and fun way to explore characters, but I don't know. I improvise them and then I'll like take nuggets of the improvisation and be like, I have to say that if I'm going to do the character, like that's the line. And sometimes it's an image in my head of something this character does. And then I will justify it by like what I am talking about, or, you know, I have to have this image that happens in this video or whatever. And then all the rest kind of builds out from that. A little bit of both. I love writing and I love like really finding the right words.
Are you still writing?
So this has been kind of my break, I guess, my creative break. I haven't been doing a lot recently.
I mean, sure. The pandemic has sucked out a lot of our creativity for sure. I mean, when would you even have found the time between, you know, going to work and crying? It's, you know,
right.
It's difficult. Yeah.
Two full-time jobs.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult. If I didn't have a child to distract me on a regular basis, I would have crumbled in a lot more situations. But I just kept myself so busy with like a tiny child running around that I was like, yeah, I don't have time for this. I'm like, right. What's that? We can't leave the house. Yeah, I left the house for a few years anyway. We're fine.
Oh, yeah. We're in a fun time right now. We're just wheels are spinning. Everything's quote unquote normal and also falling apart at the same time. But we all think it's normal. We're operating normally, I guess. I don't know. But no, I'm not writing currently. Sometimes I'll have sparks of inspiration. I'll watch like a really amazing TV show and I'll be like, oh, I got to write now. I got to finish this pilot, which I took a pilot class with Devin Coleman, another great online class. Devin still teaches. I don't know if they're doing anything right now, but
they are just announced new classes, just throwing that out there, possibly happening around when this comes out. So yes, definitely.
Devin's class is great. I didn't finish my script because the pandemic and just brain melting. There are things I'll talk with people. My script is based on like growing up in small towns and the weirdness that happens living in very small middle of nowhere places. So I'll talk with friends about that and I'll be like, oh, that would be a good thing to remember to put like this moment in the script or series or whatever that's going to become eventually. But
is it called Magic Moments?
That would be beautiful. I had a working title, but I don't remember what it was. It definitely wasn't set in stone because I was not happy with it.
Oh, yeah. I have a writing project I've been working on for the past couple of years, and I've definitely changed the title like six times.
The title is the hardest part in any writing. It's the title that I always wanted to be so clever and like all encompassing and tell you exactly what you're about to read or see. And it's like, that is the hardest part of writing, it feels like to me.
Also, like, think about the shows that you really love. Does their title really do that for you in every scenario? Not always.
No.
Right?
Like, no, yeah.
And there's so many shows where I'm like, you know, oh, this is a show that I really like. And they're like, what? What is that? I don't understand. Right. You have to like get deep into the description of what happens for them to like get it. You're like, oh, okay. So, so then this guy, you know, and you're like, I'm out. No, if I don't
sometimes
immediately
you just
get
gotta,
it.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to let go of that dream of everything just being like perfectly tidy and like the title being exactly what it should have been and like get the shit out there. But
well, also not to mention the fact that like if you're actually trying to like get it made and sell it somewhere, very often they change the title. Marketing people will take the thing and be like, what about this, can we sell? Are there boobs? Cool. Let's put those on the cover. And now let's, what can we call it that's slightly cheeky? And you're like, okay, it's not really a sex romp here. It's it's about some friends, but then it gets flipped, you know? So you just never know. People could write scripts for 27 years and they're like, this is what it's called. It really, it means something to me. And they're like, cool, cool. We're calling it dicks. And you're like, okay. Great.
I love the story of Steve Martin's Only Murders in the Building. He was like, when he was pitching it with Martin Short, he was like, this has to be the name. It's not a great name, but it's the name of the podcast that they also make fun of. It's not a great name of the podcast in the show. Have you seen that show?
No, but I'm excited about that show.
But yeah, it's like a great, terrible name for a show. That Steve Martin was like, it's gotta be it. We're not making it anything else.
I feel like you have to be Steve Martin or Martin Short to pitch a terrible name, though. Mm-hmm. And people are like, yeah, that's great. That is good names. We like it. You're like, all right. Like, you know, unless they're like, it's an homage to this specific thing. Like, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. Oh, man. It's been a tough time during the past couple of years to try to, you know, get creativity going, especially since it sounds like, and I feel similarly, other people tend to fuel your creativity. Mm-hmm. The chaos, as we discussed earlier, of people around you, of looking at the world. Like honestly, if you wrote a story called Noses and Mouths, I bet it'd sell. Like, I don't know. And in a couple of years, we're going to have like ankle porn and like, there's just going to be like, there's going to be a whole like nose website where you're like, do you remember what so-and-so's nose looked like? I haven't seen it. And you're like, oh, God, look at that sexy schnoz. Like, it's just like, it's ridiculous. But though,
I mean, Adam Driver is already pushing us in that direction just with his incredible nose.
I was going Adrian Brody. So we have similar nose excitement for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I'm looking for a strong nose and they're all hidden and it's trouble. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No. Also, I've made friends during the pandemic. Like moms at you know, parks and stuff, and found out 6 months later they didn't look the way I thought they looked. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And you're like, hey, and you're like, she's smiling at me like we're friends, so it's gotta be me. Like, oh, hey, buddy, and then I see your kid, and you're like, oh, like you just don't, you know, it's a funny situation, and I wonder how that'll go, you know, in the future. I swear there's going to be nose porn. It's definitely going to happen.
Oh, I bet. And in Chicago, it's real fun because it's so cold right now that we've got our toboggans, our scarves, our masks, our hoods, our jackets. It's just, you're unrecognized. You're anonymous. Everyone's anonymous.
Oh, yeah. Well, winter. Absolutely. Yeah. Winter, the only good time where you're like, good, I'll wear a mask. Yeah, give me two of them. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Comes in handy.
Yeah, you're like, do you have one made out of wool? I'm into it, you know?
Yeah, right.
You're like, ma'am, you can't breathe through that. I don't care. It's fine. I'm all right.
He's breathing.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. I've stopped breathing years ago. It's all right. Oh, man. You know, but despite the fact that it has been really hard to, you know, connect with larger crowds, have you taken in any things online, whether they be, you know, big time television shows on the Netflix and the Hulu, or online shows that kind of inspired you, that like made you think, oh, man, I love this new thing that's going on?
Unfortunately, I haven't like had too much willpower to watch a lot of online content. I mean, aside TikToks, I was very into TikToks for a while. And that was pretty much just sucked me right in. There's so many great things happening on TikTok. I highly recommend it if you have the time.
What about to dedicate your life to. Excites you? Because there's a lot. I had a teen teach me. I don't have it. I'm old. But I had a teen writing student, and I was like, tell me about the TikTok. And and she described that there's just different like groups doing different styles of things. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of align with a group and then end up like both watching and creating within that kind of pathway. And I was like, I'm fascinated both by that it exists and that you just explained it to me. So,
yeah.
So like, what's your thread? What's your crowd on TikTok or whatever they call them?
Well, I'm definitely, I sucked myself right into the lesbian talk, I guess. That's what it deemed me. I was like, you're a lesbian.
They're like lesbian talk shows or like
lesbian, the lesbian talk is the lesbian TikTok side of TikTok.
I'm like 1,000 years old.
A lot of mine is mostly comedy, and I get a lot of singing. I guess I liked like a couple singing things, so I get a lot of singers, which is fun. And then there are things like that are just people being so funny in, I don't know, in their own special ways. There's one series that I saw of these kids who work at a McDonald's, and they created a McDonald's reality TV show. And it is so good and so fun. It's just a bunch of teenagers that are creating fake drama in their McDonald's, like in the back, working in the back of a McDonald's. And it's stuff like that where people are just silly, like they're in their downtime, they're bored, and they create something, and it is like so perfect, and it just gives me so much joy. But you'll find a lot of that. Like, there is stuff by professional comedians, obviously, and you know, doing their characters and doing really great content, but there's also just normal everyday people that do something really, really, really fun. So you get a good mix. I guess it's just, it's the Wild West of creative content. And I love it. It's so fun. And
do you prefer the everyday people? Do you prefer the everyday people to the celebs?
I think so. I think so. Cause it's just, it's unexpected. You know, they're really great character performers out there, but they have their niche, and it's what they, you know, you come to expect like that material from them. That's their thing. But yeah, when you see like that strange, how does someone think of this? And it's always seems like it's born out of just their weird brain getting bored. I don't know. Yeah, I do like those less polished end of TikTok, which I think is what it's great for. It has so much unpolished content that's so exciting.
Yeah. There is something really great about seeing, you know, art in its early stages in like, you know, when the idea is first born, as opposed to a lot of the things that we see in movies and TV that's been beaten down and tamped out. And, you know, the thing that was the funniest part of the pilot isn't even in it anymore. Mm-hmm. And like, or like there have been a couple of shows where they've done a good job, but I've noted certain producers that do a good job of things that were like YouTube web series that became television shows and seeing the difference between one medium to the other. And sometimes for me, I'm like, I think it's a mark of a good show if it doesn't change that much, if the like vibe of it still maintains, even though it got more money and a higher production value. Like, this was popular on YouTube for a reason. Let's stick with that thing. Whereas sometimes you see something get scooped up and you're like, what is this? I watched this whole thing on YouTube, and now whatever this reboot of it is on NBC is not at all what it needs to be, like, you know. So and like I said, I try to check out like producers. Like, my favorite thing, I'm a big IMDb nerd. Ooh boy, super nerdy. And so like, if I like a show, I watch the whole credits and like make note of producer names and then look to see what other things those producers made, because in my mind, like, they have a hand in choosing and arranging which artists get certain spots, or they get to say, hey guys, I would like to work on this project, and their decisions so far I've enjoyed. So let's go ahead and see what their future decisions are, right? And yeah, of course, you know, you follow a writer or something like that. I will watch Lin-Manuel Miranda till I die. But at the same time, like, you know, I like to think of the other people in the project as having a hand in it. And so I try to follow their stuff too. And it's paid off. It's been good to find new shows where I'm like, I never would have watched this show. But I was like, hey, man, this guy made it. Let's see.
Yeah.
We love this guy. Everything he's ever made. We went on his list on IMDb, watched everything. We loved it so far. Why would he make a bad decision now? Like, just certain things, yeah. Like, because, you know, there's one thing, like, writers, you know, the nice thing about us creatives is the creative part, you know, we can do a good job. We can do a good job with pretty much anything. But, like, what are the new and interesting viewpoints? What are the people who are taking a story I've seen before and being like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I also love really weird sci-fi. Like, if you're, like, I liked Lost a lot. Because I was like, what is happening now? I do not know. And I've listened to beautiful podcasts with the people who wrote that where they were like, oh, yeah, we didn't know what was going on halfway through. And I'm like, I love that. Like, yes, it was so real and like in the moment. And like, you know, but I was down for it. My husband was like, I'm not watching this anymore. And I was like, no, I'm in. I want to know what's in the hatch, man. That's all I want.
You have no idea what's coming next.
Like, and it doesn't make any sense, you know? And I'm into it. Into it, right? So, you know, I'm looking for weird stuff. So occasionally when I'm looking around, it's easier to follow producers, you know? Because a lot of times, especially with weird sci-fi, I find, like, actors don't stick with that. Sometimes they start with it. And sometimes they do a one-off. And you're like, oh, that guy, you didn't think he was going to be in that. But, like, then, you know, it's always sort of newer people who are like, yeah, sure, I'll be a fire monster. Yeah, what's that? Okay, great.
What I would give, like, to be a fire monster.
Right? Or, like, yeah, I'll be a figment of that guy's imagination that only he can see that flickers in the background occasionally. What? Like, into it. Yes, you know? It's just, like, I don't know, weird stuff I'm like, super into. And the other, I like that you're into the sort of more homegrown stuff on TikTok. Has it also opened up your mind to other countries and what they're putting out there? Have you seen international? I don't know how TikTok works. Is there, like, you know, are you watching videos from all over the world, or...
Surely I have. I'm trying to think if there's any examples. I don't know. It's such, like, it is a big melting pot. So I don't know if I've ever noted that there's anything international. I mean, other than, like, the British people.
Yeah, it's hard with the language barrier if they're doing, like, you know, speaking. Not that everyone in the world doesn't speak English, because they do. But, like, there's, yeah, I mean, if they're making a play in their backyard, they're very likely to speak their own language. Yeah, no, I mean, I hear that. I just, for me, the pandemic has widened my eyes to different theater all across the world. Like, things where I was like, wait, what? Like, I learned about new different improv styles that they do in India that I had never heard of.
Oh, how cool.
Like, okay, tell me more about this. Like, and just like different ways that people look at things, even improv. Improv isn't done the same way as we learned it, you know? I think Austin has a relatively homogenous view of improv, you know? But whereas I've seen people where I'm like, wait, you guys do what? How did you, oh, you combined this book and this is how you, oh, interesting. Okay. Or like, oh, this person came over from, you know, Japan and taught us this style of, like, what? Wow. Okay. Great.
I'll have to pick your brain about that sometime, because that is super interesting to me. I mean, yeah, I started doing improv in Austin, and that was one of the goals to move to Chicago. So I moved here 6 months ago because, well, one, I wanted to leave the state. I've always lived in Texas. So it was my goal to, like, make a big cross country move. At some point. And also, I just wanted to experience, like, different philosophies of you know, studying just another performance style and philosophy of how to do improv. Improv is just like, there are classes there you can take, you can do a program. It's kind of, I don't know, it feels like easy access versus like with theater, there are programs and classes out there, but it's like, there's a lot more to, I don't know. It's a little harder to find your like theater class niche, I guess. But with,
yeah. You plus there's a but lot of, in theater, there tends to be a bit more like snootiness, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, you're not part of this crowd or you didn't earn your place in this.
Yeah.
Thing. I have encountered that because I am a random fly by night, like teacher in various spots. And so I will pop in at a spot and I am also deeply naive, so I don't notice when until it's too late. And then I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, why is he so angry? I don't understand. And they're like, he's mad because you're the head of the camp and he's been working here for 20 years and he's not the head of the camp. And I was like,
he didn't know the right people.
Oops. Ooh. Well, I just sort of asked if I could do the job and they said yes. I don't know. I'm pretty sure that's how you get jobs. But like,
right.
Oh gosh, I didn't realize, you know. So I think there's more of a like, you know, it's like cool kids, not cool kids thing. In fact, mm-hmm. I feel like that's why I personally left theater, like organized mm-hmm. theater, and got into improv. Mm-hmm. because improv, when I first encountered it, was more of an open door.
Yeah.
You know, was more of a like, here's a good place. And once I was told that it was supposed to be a community that helped each other, and I became a person of, you know, leadership, I was like, well, I'm going to do that for people. That's a thing that we've said, let's be there for people. So let's be there for people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's definitely what drew me into it is that, like, you know, I felt like I was not cool, stuck mm-hmm. to the corners. I appreciate that you like playing the old lady, but it's tough when you're always made to be the old lady mm-hmm. and like, that's not what you're looking to do.
It was fun in high school.
Totally. Totally.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
But I think you put it nicely. Like there is with improv, you can take those classes and then meet people and make connections with these people who are trying to cast shows and direct things and put stuff up in their comedy theaters. And so you can like work your way through class and earn, you know, your place into, I mean, of course you audition, but like you build up your, I don't know, reputation is not the right word. But people are able to see you. You're more visible through these classes and you can get cast. Whereas like theater, there's not, I don't feel like there is that stepping stone way. Like there's not a program, I guess, unless you're paying a lot of money to go to a school, you know, college.
But even then you get forced into certain roles. Like, I mean, I can't tell you the number of people I know that paid a lot of money to go to a big name school and were like, yeah, I played like random side guy number four in everything because they cast these people in and I never got anything. And it's like, there's gotta be a better way, you know, like I appreciate casting in outside of schools. I appreciate casting for like what makes sense, but inside of school, I feel like you just need to toss the jobs around and mm-hmm. like teach everybody a little bit of something. Like I was talking to somebody recently about like how some people just like haven't had the opportunity to do all the things. Like you're talking about as a child, you're writing mm-hmm. and directing and creating these things. And I'm sure in your adult life, you have also had the opportunity, air quotes, of doing all the jobs, right? But mm-hmm. If you're not in a certain kind of world, in a certain kind of vibe that like both supports you to do those kinds of things and like gives you the opportunity where they're like, yeah, whatever you want to do, you can do it. What? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then let's get that cougar costume, you know, whatever. And then, you're hanging your friend on the ceiling and you're like, he's a bug. It's part of the show. and people are like, yes, that is absolutely correct. And I feel like if you don't learn, if you don't have those experiences where you have to do everything, then when you're one part of the whole thing, you don't appreciate the larger, you know, how it gets done, you know?
Yeah. 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 So that's been an interesting thing because I have wanted to explore. I mean, I do love theater and I have like a push-pull thing with the theater world where I feel like, and it's probably my own personal barriers of thinking I'm not talented enough or have enough experience to pursue being an actor or being a dramaturg for like, you know, a company or something. But it's a push-pull thing of like, I don't know if it does feel sometimes exclusive or how do you break into, you know, a new theater scene? If you don't know anyone, do you just go to a bunch of auditions? I don't know. I haven't really, I still haven't done it yet. But I do want to explore that while I'm here, but it is something that's more nerve-wracking. Not that it's harder than improv, because improv is hard. Like that is a lot of improv auditions, like terrify me. It's so much, I don't know. It's so much scarier because there is no, you don't get to memorize a monologue or, you know, you just come in there and you like bring whatever you have and try to listen really, really hard. That can be hard.
And hope the choices that you made are the right choices in the right moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I'm trying to scare anyone about improv, because improv is so fun. And the great thing about it is it's so welcoming. But yeah, I mean,
You are making up everything on the spot. It's a validly feared art form for sure.
Yeah.
I'm okay with people being afraid of it. And listen, I think everyone should do it. And I'm pretty sure that most of the people listening to this have done it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like, if you're scared of something, it should never stop you from doing it.
Yeah. That if you're scared of something, it's probably a good reason to do it. That's you know, live by that motto. If it scares you and excites you, then you have to do it.
Yeah. As long as it won't kill you. Let's go for that.
Sure.
Let's add that caveat. Sure. Okay. Just throwing that out there.
Perfect. Know. Not endangering your life.
Because even if you wanted to do like daredevil stuff, you'd need an expert, right? My husband got himself set on fire recently for a stunt, and we made sure that he had, you know, like a couple of professional stunt guys, some like legit people who like do that kind of stuff for a living there, like on point. It wasn't just like, yeah, let's see if we can't do this in the backyard. Like, no, this was like, let's find professionals. And now that we found these professionals, let's do this cool, fun video thing. I mean, it's insane, but it's, you know, you can do anything that scares you if you find some solid support system to do it.
Yeah.
And as far as like breaking into a new theater scene, because I have lived in many cities and broken into a lot of them, I would say just walking in friendly and seeing how you can get involved is very helpful.
Yeah.
Like if there's a theater that you want to be part of, don't wait for an audition. Go work in the box office. Like go like get a job. I've seen your resume. You have enough work that you've done that could get you in the office of any theater. You know what I mean? You have enough experience and you know different parts of the theater enough that any job that they might have available, you could get, right?
Yeah.
And then once you're in the door, then you meet people, you get in there, they see you around, you know?
And then absolutely.
And then you get to that spot. Does the acting necessarily connect that way? No, they don't really have like a acting office or whatever. But it definitely is built around people who tend to work at the theater as well, you know?
Like, yeah.
That's how I get in, is I just wander in and then make myself indispensable to them. And then once they can't live their life without me, then they're like,
that is truly the best approach. Yeah. That's a great reminder too. Cause that has been something on my agenda, is I want to like volunteer at a theater or something. I've been interning at the Annoyance here, which has been fun.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of, I haven't started classes, improv classes there yet, but I plan to soon, but I've been interning for a few months and it's just fun. Like you do get to meet the people that run the place. I met Mick, like the first day that I was there for my training. I was like, what? You get to meet you? I'm like, I haven't done anything yet. I haven't swept a floor yet. But yeah, I love doing that. And it was so fun when I was in Austin interning at Cold Town. That's how I just talked to people and made connections with people and made friends and collaborators, because I was just there serving the popcorn. And I loved it. It was so fun. It's such a fun thing to do after work to, you know, go see shows for free and then also like meet all of these amazing performers and feel like we're kind of not on the same level, but just like they're people who are approachable and are open to working with you in ways. So it's fun.
I mean, keep in mind too that like every actor has that same voice in their head. When I teach improv 101, my opening monologue is about that voice in your head. I'm all like, so guess what we all share? An angry voice in our head telling us we're pieces of shit.
Yeah,
that's vampires. Right. Me too. You too. Yep. We're going to ignore that voice because you know what? They're not helpful right now. There's no fight or flight scenarios. There's nothing that we need from them to right now. They've kept us away from rabid dogs. Good job. They told us not to go down that scary hallway. All right. But right now, we don't need them. So we're going to ignore them. And
we're not about
forward.
To die, so not important.
And joining a theater community is the same in that, like, it's just people. And even the most highfalutin, you met Mick Napier. Like, you didn't meet random schmo number five, and that person was like, oh, did you want to be at that theater? You met the person who runs the theater, and I'm sure he was like, hey, nice to meet you. And that was it. Right? Because when they created the theater, they were probably your age. Like, and that there's something to honor about that. Right? Like, yeah, sure. You know, he's older now. He's still doing this. He's putting it together. Great. Awesome. Good for you. Way to keep it going amidst a pandemic. Really proud of you. But like, you know, who else is sticking around? Here's the other part. Not only is art global now, and you can see it all over and it's great and you get to learn stuff about everywhere, but anyone can do it because there are no true barriers. And I think that a lot of the open communication between people online about how to run theaters, about how to improve the way theaters are run, different things like that have really like opened the eyes of people that you don't have to be somebody who went to Juilliard or whatever, or, oh, well, I went to grad school at Tisch. Like, no, some people do that and some people don't. And that's okay. Whatever your journey was, it's like, who's here now? Who wants to make something? And if you're there now, great. Let's make something.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's totally about making yourself available, about like showing people that you work hard and like want to be there and like love the theater, love the company. And that's what I loved about Cold Town is they gave me so many opportunities. Like during the pandemic, I've never live streamed teched ever. And then I took a class with my friend Elon, who taught me how to live stream. And so I took that just to help them run their Friday night variety shows on Twitch. And then I got to tech like two major sketch shows. So I did that for the Austin Sketch Fest. They had their virtual shows. And the first year I teched with Elon, the second year I like head teched and then trained another person. It was like so cool. I've never, ever been a tech person, but to be able to have the opportunity to just like throw yourself in the deep end and like, I'm going to learn it and I'm going to mess up a lot. But these people, you know, they need you. If you step up and you're like, I'm here, I have the time.
Not to mention the fact that live stream tech was a brand new thing. Like nobody knew how to do that. So if you like put any effort into learning, you were like A plus number one, because like everyone was like, what happens? How do I make this work? When are we, why am I looking at their face? Like, you know, they don't understand. And in fact, just side note, you can make a lot of money doing that. Just throwing that out there. Like from me to you, you want to make some cash? Live stream tech, look for those jobs. People still don't know how to do it, right? And if you know how to do it, you could be making like $40 an hour. like doing gigs for that, because there are businesses out there that are all live streamed now, like talking, doing their meetings and stuff like that. And they need somebody. They need somebody to do that. It's happening all over still, and probably will forever, because, like, you know, at this point, there's no reason not to literally live stream every event.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and so there's going to be a lot more pull for that. So it's an excellent skill to have developed.
Yeah. And
good on you.
Thank you. It was such a cool experience to learn just hands on. And that's definitely I need to think about continuing that and not just letting that fall away, because I haven't done it. Well, I'm teching a podcast right now every Wednesday, but other than that, I've just kind of put it aside. But it is super cool. And I mean, all the online classes I've taken over the pandemic, just a handful, but they've all been really fun and have helped me just to spark some creativity and to just push through the feeling that I don't have anything to give right now, you know?
I do.
Yeah.
I totally understand. It was a long time. Right out the gate, I tried really hard to create a show, and it burnt me up. And I just was like, no, I can't do this. And I've consistently done podcast interviews like this, but these are long form conversations, and I connect with people I don't know, and sometimes people I know, but it's nice to just talk to somebody about a common topic, you know, and to connect on how it affects them. And it's sort of been like my social life and my continued refresher into the world. So even though I'm not necessarily creating anything for people to see, you know, and as far as theater goes, these interviews are my offer to the world of theater. They're like, this is what I give to you. Well, I don't have anything to put on stage yet. Here is what I offer to you, my people.
It's such a gift to give people, to curate so many voices of inspiration and just, you know, people that come from all different walks of life creating and trying to create and going through the same cycles of doubt and failure, whatever that means, exploration.
Even,
and
even honestly, what you're going through right now, where you're like, I moved to a new spot and I'm trying to figure out how in the COVID world do I make these connections, and that's real. That's a real thing that is happening in the world. There is a new generation of theater people in every new city trying to figure out how to do it. And I think that there's something, you know, good to be, if you're honest with yourself that you're having a tough time, I think that's the only thing you can be, is open with yourself and forgive yourself and be like, yeah, I'll figure it out. And when I do, I'll let you know how it goes. Right. Mm-hmm. But it's all right. And for anyone who's listening who may also be sort of held back and not really sure and is listening to this podcast to also vaguely stay connected to, you know, theater and the world, good. That's all you need to do, is just keep that through line from your heart to the idea. And then when the right time is for you to get back into it, it'll be there. It'll always be there. Heck, we were talking about 14th century Italian dramas at the beginning, right? Always theater. There's never going to not be performance, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Okay, one final question for you, just to wrap this up. Reflecting on what we've talked about and the journey that you've had, what advice do you have for anybody that might be similar to you, maybe younger or just hasn't quite done as much? What advice do you have for getting involved or getting, you know, out there trying to nurture their own creative spirit?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, like we talked about, definitely go volunteer. You don't have to have any background or prior knowledge to just go and work a front desk or a box office. I mean, maybe at a certain level, you have to have some experience to work a box office at a bigger theater, but you can get in the door with volunteering to be an usher and working your way up and just meeting people through those experiences. Also, classes are so great for constantly reminding yourself that there's room to grow, And, you know, you also meet people and you get to work with directors and writers and performers who can teach you their philosophy of how to do things, but also you make yourself familiar to them and they get to see how you commit yourself and how you are open to growing. And I think that that's like the best way to kind of get your foot in the door, at least from my experience. Yeah. And also just like find the joy in everyday life. When you're not inspired to create, like seek out other people's creations and other moments in life that bring you joy, and just keep yourself like spiritually fed that way until you're ready to find that spark of inspiration.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're looking for beauty around you, you will find it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much, Olivia, for being on the podcast, for chatting with me, for exploring all these really interesting topics. It's been really great talking.
Yeah, this was so fun. And I really, really appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all of our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.